Welcome to Crypto Nights, where we help you finally make sense of the trending world of cryptocurrencies. So gather your virtual piggy bank and let's get started.
Welcome to the next episode of Crypto Nights, where the best minds bridge the crypto divide. I'm your host, Kanth Miriala. Here's my usual disclaimer. These are for educational purposes only, not a solicitation nor an endorsement for investment. You do so at your sole discretion. We suggest you do your due diligence. We are not financial advisors. Tokens are highly risky and you could lose all of your invested money. With that, let me come to the more exciting topic. Alex Wan. Today's guest is Alex Wan. We are joined by Alex Wan, CEO of Aurora Labs. Alex is an expert at leading teams in the design and delivery of software products. He has managed a wide range of operations, marketing, sales analytics, and products for Amazon, Adobe, and IBM, and recently led a product management team in replatforming their application to operate on a private Ethereum blockchain. That's a project still in stealth mode. Aurora recently launched IDEX, which is the topic of today's conversation, a new high-performance decentralized exchange for trading Ethereum ERC-20 tokens. IDEX provides traders with both smart contract security and a real-time trading experience, eliminating the usability issues currently associated with Ethereum-based decentralized exchanges. With IDEX, traders can trade back and forth instantly, place multiple orders at once, and cancel orders without gas costs. So without further ado, let's hear from Alex Wan. Good morning, Alex. How are you?
Hi, Kanth. I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Welcome back. We're so excited. Congratulations on the previous episode. It has gone off extremely well, and we are very happy to have you back.
Yeah, thank you. It's great to be here.
So we had a whole bunch of other things to talk about today, and you were telling me about your stable coin and why you needed it and how you're going to use it and how it'll benefit the ecosystem of users. So why don't we start off there? You know, why did you see a need for a stable coin? And then we'll get into the how.
So when we were building IDEX, this was actually kind of the inspiration or the big factor that showed us how important a stable coin will be to our own business. So IDEX is a decentralized exchange that can only trade Ethereum assets. It utilizes smart contracts. So anything that's being traded on the exchange has to be able to be deposited into the smart contract. A consequence of this is that you can't trade anything that isn't tokenized, so to speak, that doesn't exist on the Ethereum blockchain. So when it comes to trading, the question becomes, how do you create a stable base currency market? So on other centralized exchanges, you can have currency pairs such as Ether, USD, REP, Augur REP, USD. How do you get something like that on a decentralized exchange when dollars and the Ethereum blockchain are not inherently connected? And it's not an issue for only our business. So as the Ethereum blockchain grows and other businesses want to start using it to kind of streamline their operations and improve efficiency, you're going to need a currency that doesn't have the price volatility of existing cryptocurrencies. So if you're a business and you're taking payment in cryptocurrency, or you're offering business partners credit terms, you know, it's common to give your suppliers or it's common for suppliers to extend credit to their buyers for 30 days or something. If you're doing that, you're going to want the denomination, the currency in which that credit is denominated, to be stable. I certainly wouldn't want to lend 30-day credit terms to someone in Bitcoin, because then it's just fingers crossed, what's the price going to be 30 days from now when that bill comes due? So if blockchain is ever going to expand beyond kind of the niche, kind of technology group that it's currently within, you're going to need a price stable asset that operates on the blockchain itself. And then there's a couple ways to go about doing that. So one is kind of a simplified one. The most popular or most well-known is Tether, where you put dollars into a bank account and issue on the blockchain, essentially a bearer asset. So whoever's in possession of that cryptocurrency has claim to the underlying deposit. However, there's issues with that, most notably that there's the centralization risk that you're then relying on a third party to manage the redemption of the digital version with the underlying deposit. So that's really where the question came about, is how can you create one that's decentralized, so to speak, that doesn't have those risks of redemption, but still lives on the blockchain and can be used to satisfy those use cases that I discussed before.
Got it. So can you give me an example? If we take a Joe Smith, how would a Joe Smith understand what this is and where would he use it and how would he use it and how would he benefit from it? And give me before and after scenarios with the stablecoin versus without. Yeah.
So some people think that gaming platforms will be one of the first ways that people get introduced to the Ethereum blockchain. So there's people working on platforms that will allow for sports betting, for example. So if you have, someone who's making a wager on the outcome of the game, they're going to be used to kind of their regular currency. They're going to be used to betting $100 and then, here's the odds and here's the payout that they can expect. If they make that bet in a cryptocurrency, then by the time the bet resolves, the cryptocurrency itself could be worth much more or much less than it was at the time that the bet was created. So they've essentially engaged in two speculative behaviors at that point. Both the event that they care about, the match, whatever they're betting on, as well as the value of the asset in which they're betting. What's the price of that cryptocurrency going to be when the match is over, when they actually get the funds back? So that's an example where, you wouldn't make a bet. Well, maybe you would, but you wouldn't make a bet in Google stock because you don't know exactly how much both the bet and Google stock will be worth when that bet is over. Similarly, you wouldn't make it in, it's going to be harder to make it in something like Ether because of the price volatility. So that's where we're trying to create an asset that will maintain its value. Specifically, it's important for any transaction that takes a period of time to resolve, where the assets are going to be in escrow, so to speak, right? There's either a credit period, there's a waiting period for the event to resolve in this example, something where you're going to have a time component that means that the asset, you'll want to be stable over that period of time.
Fantastic. Excellent example. The sports betting scenario was really good because, it's very complicated. Betting itself is complicated. In one scenario, now you have two.
So yes, exactly.
That makes sense. Okay. So how are you going to, what is the name of this stablecoin you're planning?
The name of the stablecoin is the Boreal.
Okay.
The name of the company is Aurora and the stablecoin is Boreal. So Aurora Borealis is kind of the way you can remember the name of the two.
And are you from Aurora?
What do you mean? The company Aurora?
No, there's a suburb in Chicago called Aurora. It was right next to Naperville.
Oh, yes. All right, I'm following now. No, downtown Chicago. All right, I'm following now. My fiance was working out in Aurora for a little while.
Okay. Yeah, but I did get the pun on Aurora Borealis when I saw Boreal. That's a good one. So let's look at Boreal. Has this technology and token been released, or is it a plan to be released in the near future?
It has not been released, and it's something that we're building out in stages. So our final vision, as I mentioned, is a decentralized stablecoin, meaning one that operates on the blockchain, but is not reliant on kind of third parties to control and maintain its price stability. It's not possible to do that yet, but we've got a roadmap and clear steps to get there. So let me kind of talk you through and explain that. So for making a price stable currency, it's really all about matching supply with demand. So if demand outstrips supply, then you're going to have the value of the asset increase. So I think cryptocurrency is a great example of that, where more and more people are interested in buying cryptocurrency. And because of it, the price has been appreciating very quickly. This is great for those who are using it as an investment vehicle, but it's not very useful if you're just looking to spend it as a currency. There's some government currencies that show the opposite problem of what happens when the supply increases faster than demand. And there you have inflation, issues with people not wanting to hold the currency, actually altering their behavior to spend it as soon as they get it. So it's really about finding that balance in the middle, matching supply with demand. And our design is inspired by free banking. It's a period of history where banks were issuing their own currency and were in charge of managing it responsibly. So if they got too loose, so to speak, with their lending standards, and there were a bunch of bad debts, then you would expect the value of the currency to fall. So they were kind of responsible for their own solvency, so to speak. So our currency is backed by a combination of crypto reserves, debt, and retailer backing and endorsement. And I'll break down each of those individually. So it starts with that third one, the retailer backing and endorsement, and it begins with IDEX. So one Boreal is equal to $1 worth of fees on IDEX, regardless of the market price of the currency. So anyone who's in possession of Boreals can use it to pay in lieu of trade fees on the exchange at the value of $1 per Boreal. And early on, we're actually going to offer a little bit of a discount on trade fees to incentivize people to pay in the stable currency. And then you can imagine a scenario where as this starts to grow over time and customers feel comfortable with this arrangement, that will actually act as a price support for the currency itself. So if the currency is trading on the open market and it starts to dip below its target value, traders will be incentivized to buy up some of the currency in order to reduce their overall trading costs, because they know that it's always going to be redeemable and honored, so to speak, by the exchange. The other two pieces are, sorry, go ahead.
That makes a lot of sense. I was wondering how you would bring up, I understand that it will not go above because it's always valued at a dollar, but I was wondering how the downward pressure would be counteracted. I think you just explained that.
Yeah, so there's a couple pieces to counteracting that. And so it's, as I mentioned, it's all about managing supply and demand. So, we're going to be we're going to be essentially performing market making around the cryptocurrency, the Boreal. If we see that it's going higher than par, we'll be able to issue more to meet that demand. If it's going lower than par, so this is where one of the second pieces comes in, anyone who purchases Boreals directly from Aurora will do so in Ether. And that Ether will be used to both back the cryptocurrency. So there's a long history of using other assets to back a currency, most notably the gold standard in the U.S., a little over 50 years ago. The idea here is that if individuals want to exchange directly with Aurora, they can always trade their Boreals in and out in Ether. So it's always going to be backed by this basket of cryptocurrency. That set of reserves can also be used to market make. And whenever prices go too high, we'll be able to issue additional Boreals. If prices go too low and we're not seeing demand, captured by these other outlets, then we can buy back the Boreals. And that actually becomes a source of profitability as well. If you're issuing currency for more than a dollar's worth and buying it back for less than a dollar's worth, there's a little bit of a spread there. And then the third piece is backing it by an asset that's been used for a long time to back currency, which is debt. So in this case, it's going to be both consumer and business debt. The idea is that individuals or businesses will be able to come to Aurora and take out a loan in the Boreal. They'll be able to then trade the Boreal for other currencies, use it ideally as payment for either on IDEX or, we want to expand that retailer backing with partnerships with other dApps in the ecosystem. So spend it at various outlets. And then when it comes time to repay that loan, they'll have to purchase additional Boreals, both principal and interest. So if you borrow 100 Boreals and maybe you have to pay back 105, that's going to be another source of upward pressure, another source of demand that people have for purchasing Boreals and that loan repayment. And debt actually has a long history of being used to back a currency. It's kind of how you can use it as a lens to view how the modern economy works. So when banks create a new loan for individuals, Those individuals use it to invest in businesses, buy houses, buy cars. That essentially becomes collateral that if the individual is to default on the loan, you know, that's kind of the value that the bank is able to redeem. And then in the case of something like a business, it becomes an income generating asset for the individual who's created it. And then that's how they're able to then pay back the loan itself, pay back the debt. So that's kind of a third, asset we're using to back this currency. And that one's really interesting because debt itself is inherently decentralized. Given the nature of blockchain, we can open this up to many individuals all over the world, which can help reduce the risk because you've got, rather than people in one country or region or town, all having the credit of this asset, you've got people all over the world in different economies, which helps reduce the risk because you're going to have less systemic risk and less kind of correlation between the success of these different individuals.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. And earlier you had also told me that for the dollars, taxes were the use case. And for you, is the primary use case loans and debt repayment? What do you see as a primary use case?
So this is also going to, I think, build out in stages. And I think it's definitely a new idea. We think people are going to be a little uncomfortable with it early on. So it starts really with the focus on IDEX. It's how do we get people comfortable with using it as payment for trade fees? And then the big benefit to the exchange itself is that it provides that stable base currency market. So right now on IDEX, all of the trading pairs use Ether as a base currency. So you've essentially got the asset that you're trying to buy or sell, as well as the base currency, which also itself moves in price relative to the US dollar or euro or whatever else, kind of the traders use for most of their everyday purchases. So that's really the first step is creating an asset that is stable and can be used within IDEX as a base currency market to provide more utility to those who are trading on the exchange. Once that has proven its value and people are comfortable with it, that's when we'll begin to expand into the decentralized loans aspect of the product.
Excellent. That makes a lot of sense. So the stages in which you're growing is you'll start off by having people use it for trading within your platform. And then I think it is a step-by-step. You will kind of learn as you go. And as that use case gets nailed down and stabilized, you will start introducing more and more use cases into this currency.
That's exactly right. And so you can think of the exchange itself as kind of a form of, we're calling it retailer backing or endorsement. And if you think about how government currencies work, the reason they're valuable is because a large entity, the U.S. government has backed this currency and said, this is the only currency that we will accept as payment for taxes. And there's $3 trillion worth of taxes paid every year. So that's quite a lot of demand for the currency. So we're trying to think of how can we use the similar idea, but within the blockchain-based economy. So we're starting with IDEX and we're looking for other partner dApps who want to join and have the same kind of endorsement or backing. And for that, they'll be able to share in the success and in the proceeds of the loans and interest that eventually comes from the expansion of this stable currency into the lending side of the platform.
Or sports betting or any of these other use cases where you said there is a time element between the ball, the repayment and the loan or the event in the case of betting. So the time element and the volatility seem to be the key, the drivers behind Boreal.
Exactly. There's a lot of other platforms that, would be interested in partnering up because there's a lot of utility to their users from having something like this on the blockchain. And, we're not the only ones that are trying to tackle this stablecoin problem, but we do think we have a unique approach, a unique combination. Others are trying to do it just by managing supply and demand and simply trying to do algorithmic central banking is the way to think of it. So if people want more, they create more. If people want less, they buy them back. But that can have the issues of all of a sudden everyone's rushing for the exits at once. So the interesting thing about the Boreal is going to be the transparency. So if you think about the nature of the blockchain, individuals will be able to see at any one time, how many of these are in circulation. You know, what's the amount of reserves that are backing them? You know, how much ether is behind this stablecoin? What's the rate of usage for trade fees on IDEX? If there's 5 million in circulation, but there's 10 million of trade fees every year, then in theory, it's, you know, 6 months before all of these are pulled out of circulation. So, okay, well, I feel pretty comfortable with the amount that's out there, that there's not going to be a risk of redemption. And then the fourth is being the rate of loan issuance and repayment. So you can see, you know, individuals who've been granted loans, how quickly are they paying them back to the bank? So it brings a level of transparency that is not available in the existing system for anyone to be able to assess and understand kind of the health of the entity that's creating and lending this asset.
Well, that's very exciting. So what do you have a timeline for Boreal?
So yes, our timeline is within the next year, we want to have it released on the exchange. The plan, like I mentioned, is to start there and really just get comfortable with this idea of a stable coin that's backed by, you know, not a physical asset in a bank account. You know, from that point, there are some dependencies on other products within the ecosystem. So for example, identity and credit scoring that's going to be existing on the blockchain. That stuff is a crucial element for the success of our project. You know, we will have some information from what people are trading on the exchange as far as, you know, typical kind of holdings or velocity of their trades, you know, approximately how much in assets they have. But for others, we're going to be relying on these identity and credit systems. Examples are Uport and Repsys for identity or Bloom with what they're trying to do with decentralized credit scores. That will be crucial for us to properly assess the credit risk of individuals who are trying to apply for a loan in Boreals. Additionally, we're curious to see how things like the debt collection ends up working. You know, if there's an analogous version of that ends up popping up on the blockchain, you know, having people connected to their real world identities so that you can issue loans for physical assets, but not be at risk, at higher risk of default than you are with kind of traditional banking system. So that's kind of the unknown, just because there's more dependencies. And I think there's both on our side as well as some of our future partners.
Okay. Well, what are the risks, Alex? What I mean by that is, what are some prerequisite elements, A, B, C, that need to happen to make Boreal a success?
So I think we just need to see that kind of our thesis, our hypothesis, in terms of being able to back it by this collection of decentralized assets, just to see that works, that, you know, this is something that borrows from things that we've seen be successful throughout history, in the history of finance, you know, backing it by an actual hard asset in terms of, you know, gold-backed currency, backing it by endorsement, so to speak, in terms of the way that fiat works today, and as well as debt in terms of the way banks work by lending out deposits from other creditors to other borrowers. So a combination of all those with a new form of technology in kind of an interesting time, so to speak, politically, in terms of people being interested in exploring different ways of kind of representing money than what we've dealt with in the past. So it's a lot of new stuff. I'd say that's the biggest risk. It's just we're combining a lot of different things, and that's really why we're taking a phased approach, right? We want to roll it out slowly, and we want to make sure that things are stable and people are comfortable with it before we move on to the, you know, progressively more unique and interesting aspects of the project.
Any other questions that I did not ask? Any other important or useful information for the audience that I might not have touched upon?
That's mostly it. I guess I'd just remind people that we have our token sale. It might be going live by the time that this podcast is airing, but we have our token sale available at auroradao.com. So those who are interested are able to buy a membership, which gives them free trades on the exchange for 2 years, as well as a stake in Aura tokens, which will be it's the network token of the Aurora network. It's used to stake our sidechain, as well as support the aspects that create this decentralized bank that I just discussed. And individuals who are staking their Aura tokens will be rewarded for their efforts and for their support via trade fees from IDEX and the interest from Boreal loans. So it's an opportunity for those to kind of join us in our efforts, right? So you can get benefits from the exchange in terms of free trades and then become essentially a partner, so to speak, or an operator of the next version of our platform.
Can you spell that URL, please, for us?
Yes, it's Aurora, A-U-R-O-R-A, DAO, D-A-O, .com.
Thank you very much. Alex, we wish you the best. You're working on some extremely disruptive technologies, and we wish you and your team the very best. And we hope to have you back in the near future with progress reports, and all the best for the token sale as well. Good luck to you.
That sounds great. Thank you, Khan.
Thanks for listening to the Crypto Knights. Never miss an episode. Subscribe now at www.cryptonights.io.